You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
I'm already in a good mood, Keith. That's all it took. 30 seconds, and I'm in the best mood of the whole day. Do you ever just go and listen to a song, a cover, just instrumental? Because I do from time to time, and I love that feel-good stuff. Well, hold on. You got to get your mic on. We got to get you piped up here. You missed last week, so all your stations cut off. While you're getting set up, let me welcome everybody to the show. It's Saturday, June 3rd, first show of the month of June, halfway through the broadcast calendar year or thereabout. And I'm James, he's Keith, and here we go.
Well, can you hear me now?
Nah, I hear you.
Am I there?
There you go.
Well, I was going to say, those early Beatle Lennon McCartney songs like Bad to Me, that was just a giveaway. They gave that to Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas. You know, when they basically could have had a number one hit for themselves with it.
They were giving away hits. They're giving away the story.
But, you know, it sounds so much, those early Lennon McCartney songs sound so much like Buddy Holly songs. Buddy Holly just, you know, they just flipped off of his, you know, fingertips or his lips, you know, almost daily. Great songs.
Okay.
In his songbook. And he was a great inspiration to Lennon and McCartney.
All right. Well,
and they sound alike, quite frankly.
Opening salvo. My dad called earlier. You'll be happy to know this. He specifically asked. He listens to every show, never misses. He always calls on Saturday before the show to see what the show is going to be about. He wants that inside information before we get started. And he said, is Keith going to be there tonight? He missed last week. The show's always better when Keith's on. I said, yeah, don't worry, Dad. Keith's coming in tonight.
Well, Confederate man called, by the way, too, and he reminded me that today is not only his birthday, but also the birthday of Jefferson Davis.
Okay. Well, who's your president, Keith?
Yeah, Jefferson Davis.
And happy birthday, President Davis.
Well, maybe Mr. Confederate Man will be coming along. He would be better than anyone that's in the field right now.
Happy birthday to Mr. Confederate Man and to President Davis. As a matter of fact, it is not only Jefferson Davis's birthday, it is also Confederate Memorial Day. Now, we opened the show last week. Great show last week, by the way.
Oh, I loved it.
Peter Bremelo, Jared Taylor, our friends from Antelope Hill. But we talked about it being Yankee Memorial Day. Well, today is actually Confederate Memorial Day. Last week it was almost Memorial Day, which fell on a Monday. But this Saturday is Confederate Memorial Day. And also in several southern states, June 3rd, the birthday of the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, is still an official holiday. And Confederate Memorial Day, which is also called Confederate Heroes Day in Texas and Florida, and Confederate Decoration Day in Tennessee, is a holiday that is still observed in several southern states on various days since the end of the American Civil War, though it is most associated with June 3rd.
Not all communities. I don't think they do it. They celebrate it in Memphis. But if you are in a Tennessee town now that celebrates Confederate Memorial Day, stay there. That's the place where you need to be.
The holiday was originally publicly presented as a day to remember the estimated 258,000 Confederate soldiers who died during the war between the states. The Southern Poverty Law Center has condemned the holiday as racial terror on the part of white supremacists. So if you honor your fathers and your kinsmen who died, you are, in fact, a terrorist and a white supremacist. You cannot honor your ancestors who have died.
Well,
that is racial terror.
SPLC is a Jewish terrorist organization.
Well, unlike them, I've never had anybody on my payroll be arrested and charged with domestic terrorism, but that's another story for another day. But in any event, so we were talking about this. Happy Confederate Memorial Day. Happy birthday, President Davis. And Well, let's just do that very quick then, since we're back on this topic, Keith. This is how we opened the show last week before Peter Brimelow came on. I said the only just wars that America ever participated in were the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, the Mexican War, the War between the States, if you fought for the Southern side, and the Indian Wars. Did I miss one, and do you agree?
No, I agree with that. I also, quite frankly, the American Revolution was just economic. You had the big merchants of the East that wanted to stop paying tariffs and money to the mother country. They wanted to be independent. It was not this great surge and initiative for freedom and whatnot that it was portrayed to be. Likewise, the Civil War, of course, was basically economic. Slavery had nothing to do with it at the very beginning. It had something to do with it midway through the war because Lincoln had to find a way to keep England from joining the Confederacy. He knew that if England joined the Confederacy, that the South, the revolutionaries would win just like they did in the American Revolution when the French joined the Americans in the Revolutionary War. So the way he kept them out, the way he kept the English out, was by making the Civil War and the Union sides of the Civil War a crusade to end slavery. That played very well back in England because England was the one nation in the world that had legislatively ended slavery back in 1833 due to the efforts of people like William Wilberforce. And there were a lot of Englishmen that prided themselves in their role in that. And once he made the war in America, the American Civil War, about a crusade to end slavery, he knew that British politicians could not afford to get England into the Civil War on the side of the Confederacy. It would be too divisive. And that's why it was just a stratagem used by Lincoln.
Now, if we said that no wars beyond the Indian Wars should have been fought or were just to have been fought by American forces, we have to include the World Wars in that. Now, that'll get you in a lot of trouble, but we're not going to back down from it.
Okay, let's go through World War I first. What happened?
Give me 30 seconds on each because that's all the time we got. You're going to have to really make it brief.
Well, here it is. World War I, we got into that because Woodrow Wilson was elected with Jewish help. They talked Teddy Roosevelt into running against the Republican candidate, William Howard Taft, and he split the Republican vote so that the Democrat, Woodrow Wilson, got elected the first one except for Grover Cleveland since the end of the Civil War. Once they got him in, once the Jews got him in, what they do, boom, 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 Federal Reserve Act. The income tax was passed. The 17th Amendment, doing away with states' rights. Back then, the state legislatures used to elect the senators, and then it went directly to the people. And, of course, got us into World War One. He ran for his second term saying he kept us out of war. He got back in January, and by April, he got us in the war because the Jews wanted us to be in the war. They wanted us to be in the war.
Which war are you talking about, one or two?
One.
A or B? Well, you got 30 seconds to do World War II.
Okay, well, World War II, what happened was the Jews were very upset that Adolf Hitler got in as Chancellor of Germany because one of the first things he did was run the Rothschilds and the Jewish interests out of the Central Bank of Germany.
And there's your music. Oh, okay. We'll have to come back to this. Now, why are we talking about this? There is a reason. It is another anniversary. This week marks the anniversary of the Normandy landings, June 6, 1944. That's why we're back on the topic, and we'll continue there when we come back. So stay tuned, everybody. We're just getting started. Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of the Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something.
You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today, or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast. And that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
So as we said, as we established at the top of the show, it's a pretty interesting week in terms of anniversaries and special occasions. Jefferson Davis's birthday is today. It's also Confederate Memorial Day. It is the same week that the United States landed on Normandy, the Normandy invasions, D-Day, June 6, 1944. We're talking about Yankee Memorial Day last week, the just wars and the wars that were not necessarily America's vital interests and not wars that America should have participated in. And we include World War II in that. Why, Keith?
Well, we were manipulated into it again by Jewish power and influence. After Hitler got in, one of the first things he did was run the Jews out of the Central Bank of Germany. Why did he run them out? Well, they were running it and they were getting all the money and first and foremost paying reparations to France and Britain. And it was bankrupting Germany. There was no money left for the Germans. Germans were starving. You had the worst runaway inflation in the Weimar Republic that they'd ever had. When Hitler came in, the guy was supposed to be a corporal, a man of the people. He didn't know diddly squat about banking. Well, he came in there and ran the bank, and he had such a great job done in bringing back the German economy that in 1938 he was made Time Magazine's Man of the Year for the economic recovery he engineered in Germany. But the Jews said, you can't throw us out of banking. That's one of our honey holes. He said, you're going to have to pay the price for this. So they first of all had an economic boycott of all German goods, and they are the ones that got Britain and France into declaring war on Germany and starting World War II. They had to make a point and prove to the rest of the world that nobody bucks the Jews on banking and gets away with it.
Okay, so I said last week that I had half a mind to revisit. From time to time on this show, as you know, we will revisit some of our classic, iconic interviews. And I said last week I had half a mind to bring up the interview in light of D-Day, in light of this anniversary, in light of what we're talking about with the Memorial Days and which wars were necessary and which wars were not. Brought to mind, of course, Pat Buchanan's book, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, and the conversation that we had with the presidential candidate right here on TPC some years ago.
And by the way, that was one that I would say that'd be in the top three books that Pat Buchanan wrote.
And we're not going to play the whole thing. We're going to play bits and pieces of it and let Keith respond. But we've revisited it once since, 2008 when the book came out. Only once, and we're going to do it again right now. Let's take a listen and see what Buchanan had to say about World War II.
Again, my friend, another book, another runaway bestseller, but this one is perhaps your most provocative work to date. Tell me, Pat, what compelled you to write Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War?
Well, there were a number of things. One is, it is a phenomenal story. What happened to the Western civilization that ruled the entire world in 1914, and 30 years later, all of Europe was in ashes or aflame, and communists had half of Europe, and all the great Western empires had been destroyed. And so I went back to try to locate the historic blunders that were made, and I think we located eight of them, so it was a great story in the first place. Secondly, it's a cautionary tale for the United States. The arrogance you see, the hubris of these folks, the monarchs and all their retainers just before World War I, we can see emulated today, copied today, frankly, by some folks in the post-Cold War America. So it was to try to tell a cautionary tale to prevent what happening to us, what happened to Great Britain and the British Empire.
Well, with that being said, that is a perfect segue to my next question. What are the parallels between the United Kingdom of the interwar years, those being the years between World War I and World War II, and the United States of America today?
Well, one of the greatest is the British decisions to alienate old allies like Japan, which had been a loyal ally in World War I. The Brits broke the treaty with them on the demand of the United States for no good reason whatsoever. And Japan was sort of driven into isolation and anger and rage, and eventually could return to her own imperial policy and collided with Great Britain. Italy, even under Mussolini, who loathed Hitler, was driven into Hitler's arms by the British-French decision to sanction Italy over a colonial war in Ethiopia, which was a mistake. They should have focused on Germany. And finally, you get this war guarantee that the British gave to Poland unsolicited, even though Poland had participated in the rape of Czechoslovakia. At least the regime had. And so all of these decisions, you see them replicated in the United States now, handing out war guarantees to the Baltic republics, to Ukraine, and Georgia, if McCain is elected. So I just see the same pattern repeating itself again and again. And I do believe the gentleman who said we do not, you know, people really do not learn from history was right.
Well, you know, Pat, you've offered so many great books, and I've got all of them. Every time you set to write a book, you can guarantee yourself on one sale, and that's right here in Memphis. But out of all your books, I really appreciated A Republic, Not an Empire as much as any of them. And you addressed this issue in one of the chapters in that book. And in this book, you expound upon that and certainly skewer the myth of Winston Churchill. What are some of the mistakes or myths, if you will, that hold up Churchill as a hero among many Americans, especially the neoconservatives?
Well, there's no question that Winston Churchill was a heroic figure in 1940, when he took over the premiership in Great Britain, just as the Germans were breaking through in the Ardennes. He defied Hitler, he defied the Germans, he fought on, he inspired his people, he was the leader during the Battle of Britain, and Americans watched that from across the ocean, and there was an indelible impression that here was a defiant bulldog who represented the British people at their best. That's a true story, that's not just myth. However, there's another Churchill who in 1942, 43, 44 is slipping into Moscow, dividing Europe with Stalin. I mean, groveling to Stalin in a way that would make Neville Chamberlain look like Davy Crockett, writing off the Poles for whom the British had gone to war. And then you go back all the way to the early, to 1913 and 1914. He lusted for war far more than the Kaiser, who was trying to avoid war.
That's right.
And these are all myths that we've been raised on as kids. And so this is one reason I wrote the book, at least the new generation coming up that is not sort of, if you will, saturated or marinated in these myths can understand how it was our grandfathers and fathers destroyed Western civilization.
Excellent answer. Very well put. And as with any Buchanan book, this one has received a great deal of fanfare, much critical acclaim, and a few inevitable attacks. What is it, Pat, about World War II that your detractors don't seem to understand?
I think there is an idea, and it's come, frankly, from and the book is dedicated to four of my uncles who were Greatest Generation Americans and fought in Europe, one of whom came back from Anzio with a Silver Star. I think it's the idea that this was a good war. This was a war where pure good fought pure evil, which a war that had to be fought and was necessary. And there are no doubts and qualms about it. But that is not true, as I write. And that's why you, in effect, are dispelling some of the great myths by which Americans live. When you say that, Winston Churchill blundered. Chamberlain and Churchill blundered serially again and again to bring about a war with Germany. Hitler didn't want war with the West. He didn't want war with Poland. He didn't want a world war. He wasn't even prepared for a world war.
Mm-hmm.
To say that he was a thug and a brutal dictator and a bully and someone who used threats of violence and force as tools of diplomacy is correct. To say that he did horrible things in wartime is correct. But as I say, had there been no war, there would have been no Holocaust. And I'm not sure there would have been a war if the British hadn't issued this insane war guarantee.
All right, let's just, a lot to unpack right there already. He's talking about what he calls the insane war guarantee, and it really makes you think about what Washington and NATO, but I repeat myself, are doing. And he even called out in this interview all the way back in 2008, he says, watch Ukraine.
Yeah, he said there's a war guarantee to Ukraine. I think that Buchanan is too kind to Churchill. I think that World War II was caused by a megalomaniac warmonger, but that megalomaniac warmonger was Winston Churchill, not Adolf Hitler. Hitler was not intent upon taking over the world, as we have heard ad infinitum throughout my lifetime and yours. What he was wanting to do, his program was called Ein Volk, one people. He wanted all the German-speaking people of Europe to be under one nation. And, of course, you know, all of this bad press that Neville Chamberlain got about peace in our time, about Munich and whatnot, the people of Austria voted 99% to 1% to join Germany, to give up their separate sovereignty as a nation created by the Treaty of Versailles and join Germany.
As seen in the movie The Sound of Music, although in that movie, everybody, they're acting like everybody was upset about it.
Yeah,
didn't really
I think Miss von, Captain von Trapp was the only Austrian in the whole nation that was opposed to Hitler.
All right, we'll be right back revisiting a classic PPC interview with Pat Buchanan on the anniversary of D-Day. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jerry Varnish. President Biden on Saturday signed the debt limit agreement. The bill suspends the public debt limit through January 1st, 2025, and then increases the limit a day after. It was passed this week by the House and Senate before getting to Biden's desk. Officials in India have called off the search for survivors after one of the worst rail disasters in that country's history. Nearly 300 people were killed when two passenger trains derailed Friday in eastern India. India's Minister of Railways, Ashwini Vaishnaw, says they will get to the bottom of what happened.
We want full transparency. This is not the time to do politics.
More than 1,100 people were injured in the crash. Several GOP presidential contenders were in Iowa on Saturday, speaking at an event in Des Moines, including Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
I think American decline is a choice, and I'm running for president because I think if we choose another path, we can restore American greatness. And that is the task that's before us.
Former President Donald Trump did not appear at the event. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin is issuing a stern warning to China.
The United States does not seek a new Cold War, and competition must not spill over into conflict. And the region should never be split into hostile blocks.
Speaking at a major Asian security conference on Saturday in Singapore, Austin also said, quote, "We don't seek conflict or confrontation, but we will not flinch in the face of bullying or coercion." The home of the Kentucky Derby is suspending operations in the wake of a dozen horses being euthanized in the past month. Officials at Churchill Downs say they are re-examining safety measures. The remaining races in the spring meet will be moved to another Kentucky track. This is USA News.
Attention timeshare owners. Tired of the financial stress? Were you misled by the salesperson? Don't or can't use your timeshare anymore? If any of these apply to you, then you may qualify for timeshare cancellation and get the relief you need now. Timeshare Defense Attorneys is the number one affordable fixed-fee legal solution in the country, with an A-plus Better Business Bureau rating. That's certainly better than my grades. They even offer a 100% client satisfaction guarantee. Let one of their experienced lawyers evaluate your case and explain the process. If they take you as a client, they'll work on your case until it's resolved in your favor, guaranteed. Expect great service and a close working relationship with your lawyer, keeping you informed every step of the way, protecting your rights, interests, and even your credit. It's that simple. Even a kid like me can understand it. The consultation is free. Call today.
800-875-1853. 800-875-1853. That's 800-875-1853.
All right, we're going to continue to play a couple of more highlights from one of my conversations with Pat Buchanan on this program some years back. 2008 it was, when his book Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, it was actually June of 2008, I remember, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. But we're going to play a few more highlights, a few more clips from this interview. Keith will be logging his reactions in his mind, and then we'll turn him loose and see what he has to say. Here's another clip. Let's listen to it now.
Well, you know, history is, Pat, kind of like a Sunday buffet. People seemingly take what they want and leave the rest on the table. And, of course, it's been lost to antiquity, the fact that the vast majority of Americans stood with Charles A. Lindbergh and the America First Committee in opposition to our entry into World War II before the attack, of course, on Pearl Harbor.
Well, good for you. Good for you in bringing up Colonel Lindbergh's name, because his reputation has been blackened because of a single speech he gave and a couple of paragraphs in it where he said that, there are three forces that are moving for war, and one of them is, of course, the Roosevelt administration. The other is the British, which was clearly true. They had the man called Intrepid, William Stevenson, tried to find ways to get the Americans into war, putting up propaganda, frankly, blackmailing senators and everything. And then he said the Jewish community is beating the drums for war, but this is going to be a disaster for the Jewish community if we get into war. And, of course, that was verboten to say, but frankly, no one has said what he said was, palpably untrue. And these folks, and before December 7, 1941, the America First Committee offered, they said, look, let's put up a resolution in Congress saying we declare war on Germany and have it voted up or down, but don't sneak us by a back door into war. Uncles had fought and bled and died in World War I, only to make the world safe for democracy, only to see the British Empire annex another million square miles.
And we're certainly following in their footsteps with regards to the collapse of what was truly the greatest nation in the history of civilization, these United States of America. But you mentioned propaganda. Had divine providence seen fit for Pearl Harbor to have never occurred, let's say the United States stays home and Germany proceeds to defeat Stalin, what would America have looked like in 2008, Pat? Would Hitler have come over here, liquidated Christianity, holocausted our people, or would perhaps the world have been a better place had we abstained?
Well, you can't know. I mean, by then, when you're talking about 1941, Hitler did not want war in the West. That's why he didn't demand the return of Alsace-Lorraine from France, where he did want the return of Danzig from Poland or from the League of Nations. And he did not want war with Britain, never did. He wanted to see the British Empire preserved. He was a great admirer of it. He thought Britain was a natural ally of Germany because they had no conflicts. And so I think if the British hadn't given the war guarantee, I don't know that there would even have been a war with Poland, because the German offer was not outrageous for return political control of their city, Danzig, with the Poles having economic control. And I don't know if there would even have been a war with the Soviet Union then, for the reason that Germany would not have had a border with the Soviet Union. They would have had to get permission from Romania or from Poland or from Hungary even to invade the Soviet Union. So I don't know there would have been a war.
All right, so that's interesting. And I'll tell you, it is that sort of diversity of opinion. They hate diversity of opinion. Having an honest inquiry with a learned student of history like Pat Buchanan, you want to know why they hate the political cesspool, why the political cesspool is always under such withering assault from leftist hate groups and the media at large You're not supposed to be welcome to the party like that.
See, he's a revisionist historian like Harry Elmer Barnes, who the Barnes Review, one of our frequent guests on this show, that's what the Barnes Review is named after, Harry Elmer Barnes. Here's the situation about what was going on. After World War One, Germany was humiliated and misled into laying down their arms at the armistice, as they call it. They didn't call it a peace then. It was just an armistice. The Germans put down their guns. And then at the Treaty of Versailles, after bailing out Europe, America and Woodrow Wilson were ignored, and the vengeful British and particularly the vengeful French got control of the proceedings and basically turned Germany into a slave state where the people were working to pay off war debts supposedly owed to the British and the French. Now, in World War II, Adolf Hitler engineered a remarkable economic recovery for Germany, so much so that in 1938, Time magazine made Adolf Hitler Man of the Year because...
So I guess that's a neo-Nazi publication, and that's the thing. They'll say, you know, if you think Pat's a neo-Nazi, whatever passes for that these days, and I guess you'd almost have to be black to be one. That's what I see in the news now anyway, but or non-white in some regard. But this isn't a neo-Nazi conversation, whatever that means. This is an honest conversation with an honest man, and what we're doing here is just asking the questions, you know, seeking the truth. And I think everybody should have the ability to do that without being run down and run out.
Yeah, well, you know, there's really a lot to be said for the German position. Germany did not want to have war with Britain in World War One. The Kaiser didn't, and in World War Two, neither did Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler could have wiped out the British army at Dunkirk. You heard about the Germans going through Ardennes when Churchill became the prime minister. Well, very shortly thereafter, the British army was cut off without an escape route at Dunkirk, and Germany could have turned on them and massacred them.
Well, I think they probably would have lied to at that point, but...
No, they didn't. What Hitler wanted to do, he still had hope that he could... pretend that he
well, the way the new, he, Dirk, he can, the new Dunkirk the, movie says that Hitler was drawn out and he,
no, well, of course, but that's just one of many lies. The thing is, what he wanted to do was he didn't want to replicate the mistake that was made in World War One and not capture Paris. But the other thing was he also had hope that he could talk reason to the British and tell them, look, we don't want your land, we don't want your colonies, we don't want money. Why don't you and just, you know, withdraw your troops and
no,
we'll
I agree
make
with
peace.
Buchanan. He didn't want war. He did not want war with Western Europe.
And when Britain wouldn't do that under the obstinate warmonger Churchill, he went so far as to parachute Rudolf Hess into Scotland, trying to get in touch with the, you know, directly with the British people and tell them, look, we don't want to have war with you. We want to make peace. We don't want any of your land. We don't want any of your colonies. We don't want any of your money.
It was an ideological war against Bolshevism and communism.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. See, Germany, Adolf Hitler was a anti-communist grassroots leader that rose to the head of the class, just like Mussolini was the same thing in Italy. Ferdinand Franco was the same thing in Spain. Well, they were trying to... The one group that Hitler wanted to fight were the Russians because he saw communism as a great threat to European civilization, Western civilization, and he thought that the British should ally with the Germans to help fight the communists.
That was one thing I was going to say in response to that last clip we just heard. We loved the Russians then. They were our great allies, but now we hate them. I wonder why. I wonder why we're at war,
because
at war with them now, but we were their allies when they were at their most wretched.
Well, that's because Franklin Roosevelt was a closet communist. He was a socialist, and he admired Stalin, okay? And that's how we got involved in it. And Churchill hated the Germans and would have aligned himself with Satan himself to fight the Germans and win. So that's why they became allied with Stalin. Stalin and America were the big winners in World War II.
Yeah, look at them now, though. I mean, Russia's all right now. Look at. We're going to talk about this in the next segment. We're coming up on a break, so you can go ahead and finish off your thoughts. Then we'll ask, who won that war? Was the cost in lives worth it? What do we look like now compared to what we looked like in the early 1940s?
The big victory we had after World War II was because of the Bretton Woods Conference. The U.S. dollar became the world's reserve currency. Everybody had to pay for their goods and services of foreign nations in dollars, and that gave us enormous economic power. It allowed us to just print money the way we're doing now, but the game is almost over for the United States because we've tried to use that power illegitimately, using economic sanctions, seizing billions of dollars of Russian dollar reserves, and basically just stealing it. And the rest of the world sees what's going on. They say, I don't want to put money in dollars. So they're looking for alternatives like the Chinese yuan or this new BRICS coalition is allowed to have its own currency or whatnot. But basically, our days of having the world's reserve currency are numbered because the Jewish neocons that run our foreign policy and got us into the Ukraine war have overplayed their hand. And now the rest of the world is ready to dump us and move on and make America's great, regime history.
Well, we'll see. It's been a long time in the works. America's made every mistake it could have for a long, long time. We'll be back.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Fighting for the soul of liberty and true pursuit of happiness for everyone. Freedom Fest 2023 is coming to the home of the blues and birthplace of rock and roll, Memphis, Tennessee, July 12th through 15th. It's the ultimate summit for liberty, educating and empowering through art, music, film, and comedy, while promoting economic freedom and highlighting today's political issues. Use promo code ROUND50 to save $50 off the current rate. Reserve your spot at freedomfest.com. See you in Memphis.
My name is Christian Knuckles. I prophesy there will be no revival until the church leadership stops lying to the people. I'm the first soldier of the spiritual body of Christ, the Lion of Judah, the Confederate Church of Christ. I'm here to declare the lion will lie down with the lamb when the lying stops. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries and brought to you by ConfederateChurchOfChrist.com.
All right, let's continue on. A couple of more quick clips from this interview that we've been revisiting this hour, and here you go.
But let me ask you this. How did you go about researching for this book? This is yet another typically well-researched Pat Buchanan book. Who did you primarily consult with and reference when writing this?
Well, what I did was, after I did A Republic, Not an Empire, I got that good letter from George Kennan, the great geostrategist of the Cold War, who agreed with me on a point I'd been really torn apart for, which was when I said, look, if once after the Battle of Britain, if the Germans couldn't get air superiority over the British Isles, they certainly couldn't get it over the Atlantic, and if they couldn't land in England, they're not going to land in the United States. It's preposterous. There was no threat. And I was attacked for that, And I sort of determined, I said, at some point I'm going to expand on this argument because I think it's true. And so, well, you know, I started reading more and more books, and I was going to write a book on the war guarantee. And then you go back and say, well, how did we get to there? And you keep going back, and I had to sort of cut it off in 1905. But I've got about 120 books, histories, biographies, all, I mean, Churchill, I must quote six of Churchill's books, mm-hmm. six of Andrew Roberts' books. He's a friend of mine, a historian in Britain. And you just keep reading them, and what you do is you decide, here's the six key decisions and pivot points that decided the history of the century. One of them, of course, is just before the 6 weeks between Sarajevo, the assassination of the Archduke in World War One. You get Versailles, another. And I decided that the British breaking their treaty with Japan was another at the Washington Naval Conference. And then I've discovered that Mussolini despised Hitler, loathed him, wanted an alliance with the West. So you did the stress affront, then the familiar ones, Rhineland, Anschluss, Munich. But the key one is the war guarantee. And that's the soul of the book. And I would, if people can only read one chapter, read that because it shows how leaders in panic and haste and folly who have been knocked on their heels by being humiliated can make a horrendous decision which costs them everything, for everything, the whole British Empire and the British nation as one of the first ranked of nations that was put on the line in an insane war guarantee that the British could not honor and did not honor.
All right, so that leads us to the question, Keith. You look at that. Was it worth it? We're talking about why are we revisiting this week? Well, last week was Memorial Day. This is the week of the anniversary of the D-Day invasion. And you look at what the British Empire looked like in 1939, what the United States looked like in 1944, what all of Europe looked like in the late 30s, early 40s. Are any of those places better off now, or are they worse off now? And in what way did World War II determine these outcomes? That's the question. You see the memes all the time, the people getting off those boats can't take away their gallantry, their valor, their courage. I wouldn't have wanted to have been on one of those floating tanks going up the beach there at Utah or Omaha. So they had a lot of courage, a lot of bravery, but what were they fighting for? And
they were fighting for Jewish power and influence, the same as we're fighting for Jewish power and influence now in Ukraine.
Well,
here's what's going on, okay? Here's what happened. It's so ironic that Britain got into World Wars One and Two because they wanted to preserve their position as the paramount power in Europe. And ironically, the reason that they came out of World War II limping and bleeding, a mere shadow of their former self, by the time of the Suez Crisis in the mid-50s, it was quite obvious that the sun had set on Great Britain's greatness. Well, it would never have happened if Britain had done what they easily could have done and sat out both wars.
Well,
if they did, they wouldn't have lost all these people, all these men, the flower of two generations.
And that's it. You look at our losses, the losses of the United States in the two world wars, but especially World War II, and you look and you say, well, what were these guys, what did they think they were fighting against? What did they think they were fighting for? And if those men were still alive and they could see what America had turned into today, do you think they thought, my God, I'm glad we went out abroad in search of monsters to destroy rather than fighting the enemies here within our own midst?
Well, see, you're right. We absolutely disregarded the advice of George Washington, John Quincy Adams, and a lot of the founding fathers of America by allowing ourselves to get entangled in European affairs. That's not what America, you know, wanted to do. It didn't serve America's interest. America came out as a top dog in both World War One and World War Two, primarily because we got involved in those wars later than anyone else. We didn't get involved.
And he mentions
in World
that
War
right now. I want to play that right now. I believe he mentioned, I'm not playing the entire interview, I'm playing highlights, but he does mention that at one point in the interview that by America,
we got involved in World War Two in 1942. We got involved in World War One in 1917. And because of that, we suffered fewer casualties.
All
and,
right.
You know,
we're going to run out of time before I can get to all of this. But, yeah, I mean, we really didn't get involved until D-Day, which was at the very end, nearly. But yes, I mean, the bottom line is this, in my opinion, both sides lost that war. And all of European mankind, whether it be here in America or in Europe or abroad, they all lost. They
just,
all lost.
It's just like Ukraine and Russia.
Right, we're running out. We've
Jewish
play
power
this.
And influence likes nothing better than for two white Gentile nations to kill each other off. That's what happened.
All right, hold
in World
on.
War
we're going to run out of time.
World War II and in the Ukraine-Russia
here
war.
We go.
And if people want to know more, they're going to have to go out and buy the book. Right, Pat?
Yes, sir.
So that
buy book, it and take it to the beach on July 4th.
There you go. And buy a couple of copies for your friends. And that book is, of course, Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, How Britain Lost Its Empire and the West Lost the World. It is a runaway bestseller on the charts right now, authored by our good friend Pat Buchanan. Mr. Buchanan, thank you so much for coming back on our program, for fighting for our people. And last question, what can your fans expect to see from Pat Buchanan for the next 20 to 30 years?
Well, I don't know how long we're all going to last, to be very honest, but I hope to write... I've got one book in mind. I'm not sure I'm going to do it. One book in mind, which is, I think that, and it would be not a large book, but it's sort of the, it's not Death of the West, but it's sort of the coming world where I think issues of race and ethnicity and culture, the wars of race, ethnicity, and culture are going to replace the old wars, if you will, of ideology and dynasty and empire. And I see that coming, and it's not a pleasant sight, but Pat Moynihan sort of saw it coming, so did Dr. Schlesinger, and I've read a number of columns on this, and you see the divisions in our society increasingly along the lines of race and ethnicity, and I don't think it's a pleasant prospect that our kids and grandkids confront, and I'm going to try to address it and see if there's any ways that it can be resolved sort of short of some sort of balkanization of America.
Now that's the silver bullet of this interview. That's the money shot.
And he wrote that book.
Yeah, and he came back on the show to promote it when he wrote that one, Suicide of a Superpower. But we are talking about, he said in his own words, Pat Buchanan saying, the wars of empire and dynasty are going to be replaced by the wars of race, ethnicity, and culture. That's exactly where we're at now. That's exactly what's coming. Although at this late stage of our decline, we've gotten a lot worse since 2008. I think we should welcome a balkanization rather than trying to avoid it at this point.
Well, what happened is exactly what the cultural Marxists predicted. They said that Marx and Engels are wrong to think that the great fault lines in human society were economic class. He said they're not even, the cultural Marxists said they're not economic class, they're not even religion, it's race. And that's what the great balkanization, that's what cultural Marxism focuses on, race, not what communism focused on, which was economic class.
Now, there's one more thing I want to play. We originally aired this interview, we aired it live, of course, back in June of 2008, I had just turned 28 years old. It was actually the week of my birthday. So if you can do the math, I'm about to turn 43 years old a little bit later this month. But this was in June of 2008. And I let Pat know that it was a great birthday present to have him back on the show. And here's that exchange.
For your generosity in appearing with us. I turned 28 years old this week. You've made my birthday quite memorable. And
well,
we thank you for that.
I can remember when I was 28. You know what I was doing?
What's that?
I was flying around the country with Richard Nixon at just this period in 1966, trying to elect Republicans after the Goldwater disaster, and we succeeded, elected 47 of them.
So in other words, your 28th year on Earth was a hell of a lot more productive than mine. Thanks again.
I don't know about that.
Thanks again, my friend, and God bless you.
Well, God bless you. Bye-bye.
Class act all the way, a class act. He had humor. He had wit. He had humor.
He
had humor, but he wasn't foolish. He had humor that was disarming, but he was always the smartest and most serious person in the room. And when you combine his wit, his humor, his knowledge, his seriousness, his ability, well, that's why he stands out. That is why he is a living legend, a hero of mine, and the man whose influence had more of a who played the biggest role in my decision to found this program in 2004.
Well, all the things you mentioned were true, but also he loved the American people. He loved the white race, even though he didn't come out and directly say that.
Well, Sam Francis was one of his best friends. There was no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt where he stood either. There was no doubt about where Sam Francis stood. I mean, you don't have to be in your face and over the top. Everybody knows
he's always concerned with the people more than himself or his reputation or whatever power he could garner for himself. He didn't run for president because he wanted to be a big shot like Donald Trump has been accused of being. He did it because he loved America.
There was nobody better. There was nobody better to champion the cause.
There was no one that was going to say what he said and could had a snowball's chance of getting it.
And we're going to talk about that, actually. Because I revisited this interview, he did it because he was the best to do it. Nobody could carry the message as effectively as Pat Buchanan. He was a once-in-a-lifetime, a once-in-a-generation type of candidate.
No one knew as much as he did.
The smartest, the funniest, the most capable.
And the most empathetic.
His rhetoric, his prose. There was nobody that could communicate like him that I've ever seen.
And you knew he was doing it because he empathized with the average American citizen.
He was just great by every standard of measurement. And let me tell you something. The ADL was apoplectic every time he would come on the show. The ADL didn't just condemn his appearances. They issued flat-out press releases to their lapdogs in the media. Now, when the ADL writes a press release, the media doesn't ask, how much do you want us to report on it? How many times do you want us to report on it?
It was the Jewish equivalent of a fatwa in the Muslim world.
Google James Edwards Pat Buchanan political cesspool. I mean, some of them are not still there. It made national news every time he came on, and he never ran from it. And in fact, he defended us on NPR. He was on an NPR interview. They asked him about, why do you keep going on the political cesspool? He goes, well, am I supposed to go to the ADL and ask him if I can go on that show?
Well, we've got to take a break.
The music's playing.
He was loyal. Like no one else.
Well, he was loyal even though it cost him, and he certainly did more for us than we did for him. Listen, I love the guy. I wouldn't have been here. I'm going to remember.
God bless him right now. If you're listening, Mr. Buchanan, God bless and keep you.
We're going to talk about some of the great Buchanan quotes of all time in the next hour and that 2000, that final presidential campaign, and I was there.